Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio. Everything that I got is just
good morning, good morning, good morning, sweet, beautiful Texas and beyond. Can't beat Amarillo by morning to kick off the Texas deer and duck season, which is exactly what we're doing here today. I'm Cable Smith, by the way, and this is Dallas Safari Club's Lone Star Outdoors Show, presented by Lone Star Beer and Hoff Power Polaris. Hope everyone is having a great weekend. I most certainly am, but then again, there's no place I'd rather be than talking, hunting, fishing, the great outdoors, and all that implies with you fine folks today. So I sincerely appreciate you being here, as we have got a great show lined up for you. And you know what to do by now. Y'all know the routine. Pour yourself another cup of coffee. Pull up that stool a little closer to the old campfire, because we've got a ton to get into. And it's going to be pretty whitetail heavy today, that's for sure. We'll start things off when Alan Kane, our Texas Parks and Wildlife Whitetail Program Leader, stops by. We're going to get into the little known about LAMPS permits that are available to all you hunters out there who hunt in no doe counties or counties that have restricted doe harvest days. So interesting stuff there. And then we'll talk about the relationship between a doe and its fawn. When is that fawn able to survive by itself if you were to harvest that doe? And how should this be affecting, or should it be affecting, your overall management plan? Interesting stuff coming up there with Alan. Then, like we said, duck season opens today as well. So our good friend and longtime duck guide, Ed Hansen, of Hansen Outdoors will be here. We'll talk some early season duck hunting tips with Ed. So some good stuff coming up here on the waterfowl front as well. Then we'll jump back to whitetails. Why wouldn't we? It's opening day, of course. That's what we're going to do, is talk some more whitetail deer. And this time we'll put a different spin on it, however, as exotics continue to increase their foothold on the Texas landscape, whether that's established herds on low fence places like in the hill country, or, you know, high fenced ranches. But anyway, there's an interesting dynamic between whitetails and these introduced species. And our good friend, Butch Amlong, ranch manager at Squaw Mountain Whitetails, he's been doing this for two decades. He's seen it all when it comes to the interaction between whitetails and exotics. So we'll break that down coming up here in just a little bit. And then we'll round out the show by sharing a pretty sweet tip with you that will ensure that the fish you catch preserve the best possible flavor for the table. A very simple thing you can do after catching a fish. And Lone Star Outdoor News writer Steve Schwartz will be here to share some insight on that topic with us. So it's going to be a great show. I'm certainly looking forward to it. Hope y'all are as well. Couple other things to mention here. Don't forget that our Dallas Ducks Unlimited annual banquet is coming up this Thursday, November 6th. It's at the Centennial Building Fair Park, and we still have a few tickets available for the event. I believe we'll have over 500 attendees this year. We've got 40 guns to raffle off. It's going to be a pretty sweet deal. Check out our Dallas Ducks Unlimited Facebook page for more information. Also, I want to remind everyone that we have partnered with Reno Viola Outdoors, a fabulous outdoor radio network. We actually air three times on Mondays, I believe, but they've got basically 24/7 outdoor programming. It's all outdoor talk shows from various parts of the country, so a lot of great content on that network as well, and you can check it out at renovioolaoutdoors.com. Also, we want to remind everybody that our November Photo of the Month contest is going on right now. We're accepting submissions. This month's prize is a two-man guided duck hunt with our buddy Ed Hansen of Hansen Outdoors. All you have to do is email your best outdoor photo to lonestaroutdoorsshow@gmail.com, or even better than that, just post it directly to our Facebook page. And by the way, if anyone has tried to go to our website here the last three, 4 days, we'd like to apologize for GoDaddy's incompetence. They shut us down because you guys and gals were using too much CPU usage, whatever that means. But basically, they explained that too many folks were listening to our podcast on our website. So I guess we're going to have to look for the next best thing, someone who can host our content and all the good folks that are checking out the website and listening to the podcast. But we'll be back up and running again this week, so sorry for that minor inconvenience. But hang tight, and we'll be back up at some point early this coming week. Let's go ahead and do a quick giveaway here. How about a Foreverlast package? We've got a pair of Foreverlast saltwater pliers, great for removing that hook from those saltwater fish. Sometimes have pretty sharp teeth. Also, a Foreverlast cap and T-shirt. So let's go ahead and have y'all text in on the text line the word Foreverlast. That's Foreverlast to 214-289-7807. Third person to text in Foreverlast, we'll send you the Foreverlast fishing pliers, a Foreverlast cap and T-shirt. And all you have to do is text in. Actually, we'll give two of those prize packs away this morning. So the third and fourth people to text in Foreverlast this morning, we'll hook you up with the fishing pliers, Foreverlast cap and T-shirt prize pack. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're talking whitetail deer with Texas Parks and Wildlife Whitetail Program Leader Alan Kane. You're listening to Dallas Safari Club's Lone Star Outdoor Show. Kill that loud door, roll it in, let it out, put me down, pull up a fight.
Did you know there's a bank that will pay you to be its customer? That's right. Lone Star Ag Credit is a cooperative, and since it's owned by its stockholders, pays millions in dividends each year. That's free money to every borrower. Lone Star Ag Credit serves people all over Northeast Texas, assuring you competitive interest rates on real estate loans, rural home loans, livestock and farm and ranch loans. Contact Lone Star Ag Credit today at 800-530-1252 or on the web at lonestaragcredit.com. Equal housing lender.
Whitetail season has come and gone, y'all, but that doesn't mean it's time to stop hunting. Coons Canyon Ranch in Rock Springs, Texas specializes in exotics such as axis deer and black buck. Coons Canyon offers quality animals at a price the working man can afford. Military personnel, police, and firefighters get 10% off the total price. Lodging is available upon request, as are other exotic species. Visit CoonsCanyonRanch.com for your next exotic trophy hunt. That's CoonsCanyonRanch.com.
Hey friends, Cable Smith here for DFW Safes. We all know that our guns are a big part of our lives, from grandfather's old 12-gauge to that trusty tack driver of a deer rifle. And DFW Safes is North Texas' premier safe dealer, specializing in Rhino, Bighorn, Huntsman, Heritage, and Fortress safes, to name a few. They're family-owned and operated and have over 24 years' experience in the safe and installation business. They even have commercial safes for your business and scratch-and-dent safes for the most frugal of gun owners. Visit DFWSafes.com to set up your delivery today. That's DFWSafes.com or call 817-715-1068. At LSC Trailer Sales, we offer a full line of utility trailers, from small single axle trailers to heavy equipment trailers, ATV trailers, car haulers, landscape trailers, cargo trailers, truck beds, and more. We can special order a custom trailer specific to your needs and have the ability to customize standard models in-house. LSC Trailer Sales is here to assist you with any questions you might have about trailers. Call 940-484-5500 or visit us at lsctrailersales.com. Finally, quality trailers at affordable prices in Dallas-Fort Worth.
Are you looking for the perfect place to send your hunting buddy? Then check out Tioga Retrievers. With over 20 years experience, Angie and Tim Becker can provide you with a field champion or a well-rounded hunting companion. Tioga Retrievers takes pride in catering to the needs of each owner and their dog. Conveniently located 45 miles north of DFW in Aubrey, Texas, Tioga Retrievers also offers day training and boarding. Call 940-440-0018 or visit them online at www.tiogaretrievers.com. That's T-I-O-G-A retrievers.com.
This is Governor Rick Perry, and you're listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
Will you ask me what I like about Texas? I tell you it's the wide open spaces. It's everything between the Sabine and the Rio Grande. It's the Llano, it's the Caddo. It's the Brazos and the Colorado. It's the spirit of the people, that's y'all, who share this land.
Cold Lone Star in my hand. What I like about Texas. One of my favorites there from our good friend, Mr. Gary P. Nunn, bringing us back on Dallas Safari Club's Lone Star Outdoor Show, presented by Lone Star Beer and Hoff Power Polaris. I'm Cable Smith. Appreciate you being here with me today as opening day is finally here for all of the rifle hunters out there, and we couldn't be more excited. We're going to talk some whitetails here momentarily, but first, this segment is proudly brought to you by Dallas Safari Club, the worldwide leader in big game conservation. They're based out of Dallas, but it truly is a worldwide group of passionate conservationists. To get involved with this great group of folks, go to biggame.org. Well, like I said, it's opening weekend. It's the best weekend of the year, and we got to talk some whitetails. So joining us now to touch on a couple topics on the management side of things, it's my pleasure to welcome back our Texas Parks and Wildlife Whitetail Program Leader, Alan Kane.
Glad to be here, Cable. This is the right time of year to be talking about deer.
No doubt about that. And, you know, Alan, folks have been bow hunting, obviously, and those under MLD Level 3 have been rifle hunting since September 28th. But despite the record high temperatures this October, we've seen a lot of good deer hit the ground already.
Sure. I know of a buck that some of our staff sent in a picture of. A guy in Walker County killed a 163 Boone and Crockett point buck over there with his archery equipment, and it happened to be the first kill, too. So it was kind of impressive for your first deer, first archery harvest. And I know some deer on some MLD properties down here in South Texas in the 180 Boone and Crockett range. And so low fence country, and these folks having some good success here. The acorns are, though, are loaded on the oak trees, and I think that's slowing progress a little early, but it should taper off and deer harvest ought to pick up pretty quick.
Well, yeah, and I've seen just in the last week a 201-inch 17-point come out of Webb County, a place that I love to hunt down there in South Texas. Incredible buck. And then just recently, and this I don't even believe has been made public yet, but it's possible that a 194-inch typical was arrowed in North Texas. And we're going to stay on top of that one because that could possibly be the new state record typical when it comes to archery tackle.
Fantastic. Yeah. You know what county?
I'm not sure. I think it's Collin County. It was actually sent to me by Cody Lee, the owner of Ghost Powder, and I expect it'll all come out here pretty quick.
That wouldn't surprise me. Collin County is one of those counties we opened the season back in 2012, I believe, mm-hmm. and they've got some, you know, they hadn't had a harvest before then, and so we've had some age structure up there and good quality deer. There's not a lot of them, but so that certainly wouldn't surprise me if that's where it comes from.
Oh, yeah. There are some nice bucks running around the North Texas area, that is for sure. And, you know, despite this record heat wave that we've had throughout much of the state this October, there's, like we said, lots of bucks still being shot. And I think it's only going to get better as temperatures cool off and deer really start moving.
Well, down here in South Texas where I'm at, it's definitely been in the 90s and been pretty warm, but other parts of the state, hopefully, it's been a little bit more comfortable. But tough, you know, that makes conditions tough on the deer hunters out there.
Well, a couple of specific things that I want to talk about today, Alan, is number one, there is a special permit out there issued by, I believe, y'all's biologist, you know, through Texas Parks and Wildlife called LAMPS permit. Not real common. I have actually have harvested a doe in, I think it was Van Zandt County a couple years ago, which is a no doe county except for that special Thanksgiving, like 3-day season there.
Sure.
So, but we had these LAMPS permits, and I was asking my buddy because I'd never seen one before, and he said, you know, he got them from his biologist. And I don't think a lot of people know about these permits. And I just kind of wanted to let you talk about that management tool and its availability?
Sure. So for the listeners out there, LAMP stands for Landowner Assisted Management Permitting System, which is a big fancy, you know, term for LAMPs. The acronym's much better, rolls off the tongue easier. But essentially, LAMPs tags are used in the eastern part of the state. So in counties, just like you indicated in Van Zandt County, where you have restrictive doe harvest, where you have to have a permit to harvest a doe, or you may have doe days and you're looking for some opportunity to harvest outside of those doe days. And so the only options available to landowners in those particular counties are the LAMPS tags, which we're talking about, which are only for antlerless deer, or MLD tags. And so the LAMPS tags, they're issued primarily out of our district offices over there in the Piney Woods or the Post Oak Savannah there. And if I had to draw a line, it'd kind of be from Dallas down, I guess, Interstate 45 in east, and there's just a little bit west there in what we'd call District 5 and District 6 as far in that part of the state as far as we're concerned. The LAMPS permit, it's a pretty simple process. Landowners are interested in applying to potentially receive antlers deer tags for their property. There's an application that they must complete, and there's some forms on our website, and it's under, like, if you click on the hunting link, there's another link to permits, or there's a link about business, and there's a link there to permits. You can find some information about LAMPS. But essentially, the landowner can either go online and fill out that application and send it in to the appropriate address, and we'll have somebody enter all that stuff and get it set up. Or they can call their local biologist and inquire about the LAMPS application. The application is pretty simple. Just basically your contact information, some information about the property, general information about the acres of the different habitat types in your property. You don't have to be an expert, but we want to know, do you have a coastal field or a pine forest or an oak prairie, or, you know, the kind of the different types out there. And then that information is used to help us determine tag issuance rates based on the size of your property. And then we'll use our deer population data that our biologists collect each fall to make a tag issuance or harvest recommendation. And so it's really a pretty simple program. It doesn't have the requirements that like an MLD program would, with having to have a wildlife management plan. It doesn't require that. It doesn't require habitat management practices. This is just an antlers deer harvest program in those counties where the harvest is restrictive. Tags are issued to the property, and so, you know, they can be used by any hunter on that property. It's not like a tag's issued to an individual.
Right, which is what I did on that in that Van Zandt County property.
And, you know, it's, to me, it's a good system. I hear some folks indicating in those counties in the eastern part of the state where there are antler restrictions in place, it's like, well, we're just not seeing the bucks that we want to harvest or that meet the criteria in the antler restriction. I asked them, well, do y'all, you know, harvest antlers deer? And they said, no, we don't have any way to do that. Either season's closed or they don't get the LAMPS tags or MLD tags. And I encourage folks to seek those LAMPS or MLD out there as a way to help address some of the harvest needs out there with keeping the deer population down through doe harvest. And quite frankly, just an opportunity to get your kids out there to harvest some does, or at least hunt for something other than a buck. That's a great opportunity out there. If somebody's seeking some information about LAMPS, like I said, you can go to our website, or you can call your local biologist. If you want to find out your local biologist, on our website, there's a link on the front page at the top that says lands. And if you click on that, there will be another link that pops up that shows private landowner assistance, and you can find your biologist under that. Application deadlines are September 1 each year, and so folks need to – it's late. It's too late this year to get set up for this season, but – if somebody's interested, I would go ahead and get their information in for next season. I might even start the process now, or at least next spring. Be sure to get that done early. The one thing that folks under LAMPS do have to report is the number of bucks and does they kill at the end of the season, and there's some other requirements that we ask folks to report the number of deer they see opening weekend, like the number of bucks, does, and fawn, just to help us out with herd composition in that particular area. But again, really a pretty simple process, Cable.
Right on. Okay, well, great stuff there. We always want to let folks know about every opportunity to, like you said, get out there and put some venison in the freezer, and also a great opportunity to get the kids involved as well. Shifting gears here, though, Alan, one other thing I want to talk about real quickly is that a very important relationship between a doe and her fawn or fawns. But, you know, when you're out there in the field, and this is going to vary from hunter to hunter and property to property, depending on deer density, but, you know, some folks don't get to hunt that many days a year. And so filling that freezer is of the utmost importance for them. They don't have the option to be selective. And, you know, they're going to think long and hard about shooting that doe that has the fawn with her. What should them or anyone else that's considering, you know, taking a doe look for if that fawn is with her?
Wow, that's a really good question, Cable. And it probably would take a lot more time than we have here today. But,
well, just some quick hits, you know.
But I'll give you some quick hits. And so if a hunter's out there and trying to decide whether they want to take a doe that's got a fawn or even harvest a doe fawn, maybe, things that you ought to consider is the health and survival of the fawn itself, which relates to the age of that fawn. You want to consider your current deer population and the number of deer you need to harvest. So if you're on a place where you've got too many deer, and killing that doe and maybe even killing that fawn is not a bad thing if you're just trying to get numbers down. And not that it's ever a bad thing. It's just the perception is I'm going to orphan that fawn and it may not survive. But I think folks need to consider a couple of facts. First of all, the gestation of a white-tailed deer is about 200 days. And we'll kind of take that post-oak savanna region, which runs from Dallas basically to Bastrop or Columbus area, that long strip there. I think, or based on our breeding chronology study, about 90% of the fawns are born by June 26. And fawns are weaned at 10 to 12 weeks of age. And basically, by that point, they're eating native forage. They can survive at that point. And so if you go about 10 to 12 weeks after June 26, that puts you in late September. Well before general gun season opens. So you've got another month before season even opens. And by the time folks are sitting out there in the blind, those fawns are generally old enough that they can survive if you harvest the doe. And a lot of times what happens is those fawns that maybe if you harvest the doe first week in the season and it's got a fawn with it, that fawn will probably find another social group to kind of hang around with. And so it might be another doe with some fawns or another fawn that it's hanging around with. And the downside to harvesting does or some does early that may have fawns is that the fawn doesn't have enough time to pick up some learned behaviors. Which forages do I eat? How do I avoid predators? But that's not always the case. You know, we set our seasons well enough into the fall that the fawns should be able to survive on their own. Mm-hmm. And again, if you're seeing, we see some folks say, well, I see a late born fawn. Like I said, most fawns in the state of Texas are born early enough that they're fully weaned and have had plenty of time to learn, you know, what's going on out there in the natural world before season starts. Some benefits of harvesting does early is that you're removing males in the range, so you're saving some native habitat out there and providing more nutritional resources to mm-hmm. other deer.
And one other thing that anyone who's ever seen two bucks literally go at it and, you know, within an inch of killing each other, think about how hard those bucks had to work. I mean, you'd see a buck at the end of the rut, at the end of the winter, how much weight they've lost. And if you go around killing does at the end of the season, all that energy that went into breeding that does is pretty much wasted by the buck, you know?
Exactly. And we hear that a lot. And in fact, we encourage people to harvest does early in the season for that very reason, aside from the habitat benefits. So you're certainly right. And, you know, something else to consider is that older does, you know, 3-, 4-, 5-year-old does are generally more productive. They're going to produce more fawns and have those fawns survive more often than younger does or 1- or 2-year-old. And so if you're a hunter out there and you're worried about survival of your fawns, you're trying to figure out which doe you want to take. If you got a young doe out there, don't hesitate to shoot a 1.5-year-old doe if you're just looking to put some meat in the freezer. or a 2.5-year-old doe, she's less likely to produce twins or more fawns than an older doe. And so if you're trying to keep fawn production up, having some older does out there in your population is going to help maintain that. It's a kind of a different way of looking at things out there. Some people ask me, you know, they'll have a doe with a spotted fawn out there in November, a doe with a kind of a bigger fawn that's lost its spots, and they'll ask me which one I would harvest. And I tell folks it depends on your management strategy. But at the end of the day, we do know that some does are just genetically hardwired to give birth or to come into estrus later in the year, which ultimately means they have a late-born fawn or fawn born later in the season. Now, those are generally very small percentages of the population, but if I want to maximize my opportunity for fawn survival, I want the does that are going to come into estrus, you know, when they're supposed to in that particular ecoregion or early, so their fawns are born early. So I'm more likely to shoot that doe and her fawn if they're born late. Whether it's just the fact that she got missed being bred early, I don't know that, or that's just genetically how she's hardwired. And I might let that doe go that's got an older fawn that's bigger, you know, if I had a choice between those two. Hmm. Another thing about harvesting does early in the year is that you make less mistakes in harvesting buck fawns because fawns are easily identifiable in November. Just body-wise. So that's something for hunters to consider.
Right, right. Well, great stuff, Alan. That's that pretty much sums up exactly what I wanted to get into today. And some great insight there. We certainly do appreciate it.
Certainly. I'm glad to be able to pass along some information to your folks. Hope everybody has a good hunting season this year.
I hope we get some cold weather soon.
Yes, that would be great.
Yeah.
We'll certainly see what the fall has in store.
Well, all righty, Alan. Hey, thanks for your time, my friend, and we certainly do appreciate all that you guys do for our state's whitetail deer herd. We'll do it again soon.
All right, sounds great, Cable. You take care.
All right, there he goes. The always affable and willing to make himself available, Alan Kane, our Texas Parks and Wildlife Whitetail Deer Program Leader. Some interesting stuff there. I hope y'all enjoyed it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll change things up and talk some duck hunting because, yeah, it might be opening day of deer season, but all those quack heads out there, myself included, yeah, we're all jacked up about opening day of duck season as well. Hell, I'm even wearing my calls today. Why wouldn't I be? It's opening day, y'all. I can't wait. Probably mix in some teal whistling, too. Who knows? Teal might be all we see this weekend. I don't care. I just want to see some birds. So does Belle. I picked her up from Tioga Retrievers on Thursday night. She's ready to rock and roll after her October tune-up. And I'm sure all of y'all are as well. Coming up after the break, we'll talk some early season duck hunting tips with our good friend and longtime duck guide, Ed Hansen of Hansen Outdoors. You're listening to Dallas Safari Club's Lone Star Outdoors Show.
Till the morning comes. Till the morning comes.
Cable Smith here with my good friend Craig Smith, owner of Game Guard Outdoors. And you know, Craig, Game Guard camouflage has been concealing Texas hunters for over a decade now. And this fall, we're equally as excited about the brand new and revolutionary Gulf Coast Cooler, the first modular cooler system ever to hit the market.
Yeah, Cable, we're excited about it. It truly is a modular system. And now a guy doesn't have to have three or four different coolers. He can have one cooler that he can attach another one to it. We have wheel attachments that snap onto the cooler to get it to and from the boat, and with a lot more attachments to follow this season.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to using ours in the field this fall.
And Cable, we want to thank our customers again. This is our 11th season, and things just keep getting better, and we appreciate every one of them.
Well, we appreciate you, Craig, and for more information, y'all visit GulfCoastCooler.com. Lone Star 4x4 has everything you need to customize your Jeep, truck, or SUV the way you want it. They install lift kits, leveling kits, wheels, tires, bed liners, as well as color match spray line accessories, full exterior sprayed vehicles, fenders, steps, LED lights, light bars, car audio, brush guards, steel bumpers, goosenecks, toolboxes, performance exhaust, you name it, they have it. No job is too big or too small at Lone Star 4x4. Call 940-484-5500 or visit LoneStar4x4.com. That's LoneStar4by4.com.
or check out their most recent builds on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Craig Boddington. I'd like to invite you to become a member of Dallas Safari Club, one of the world's leading hunting and conservation organizations. As a member, you'll receive Game Trails magazine, a monthly newsletter, and invitations to our monthly meetings and special activities. Join Dallas Safari Club, an international organization based in Dallas, supporting hunting and conservation worldwide. For more information, call 800-9-GO-HUNT or visit our website at www.biggame.org.
BioBore EB is the premier gasoline additive that combats the negative effects ethanol has on an engine. Its comprehensive formula is designed to protect marine engines and marine environments, yet also works great in all 2- and 4-stroke engines. It prevents phase separation and ethanol-related engine problems while stabilizing fuel for 18 months. BioBore's detergents also clean the entire fuel system of carbon and varnishes. BioBore EB has the best treat rate in the industry. 1 ounce treats an amazing 15 gallons of gas. Available at your local sporting goods store or visit BioBore.com today.
Howdy folks, I'm Lee Hoffpower for Hoffpower's Outdoor Superstore in Goldthwaite, Texas. I hope you're enjoying the Lone Star Outdoor Show. We've been a title sponsor for a number of years now, and we're proud to be a part of it. I'd also like to thank you for making Hoffpower's once again the number one Polaris dealer in Texas. Please keep buying your Polaris products from us. Send us your friends, your neighbors, all your hunting buddies, and I promise we'll keep giving the best deals on a brand new Polaris in all of Texas. Whether you're looking for a Polaris for work or play, whether you need a regular Ranger or maybe a Ranger Crew, an RZR, they've got an all-new Ace that you need to come test drive. We've also got four-wheelers from a youth model all the way up to the all-new Sportsman 1000. For your Polaris headquarters, Hoffpower's Outdoor Superstore in Goldthwaite, Texas is who you need to see, call, or get on the web and contact today. You can check us out at hpolaris.com. That's H is in Hoffpower, polaris.com. Or you can come see us at Highway 84 West in Goldthwaite, Texas. And folks, Hoffpower's has been in Central Texas for over 50 years now, and we couldn't have stuck around this long if we were steering you wrong.
This is Dale Hall, CEO of Ducks Unlimited, and you're listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
Great stuff there from our good friend and hunting buddy, Justin Bowerman. Duck Blind is the name of that one, bringing us back on Dallas Safari Club's Lone Star Outdoor Show, presented by Lone Star Beer and Hoff Power Polaris. I'm your host, Cable Smith. I do appreciate you being here with me on this, the opening weekend of the Texas waterfowl season, and we're actually about to talk some early season duck strategy here, but first, this segment of the show is brought to you by Rudy's Barbecue and the all-new G&H Decoy Navigator Motion Decoy. Put realistic, lifelike motion into your spread like never before. Available in both swimming and feeding models of just about every duck species out there. Check them out at ghdecoys.com. It's the all-new Navigator, brand new for 2014. Let's go ahead now and bring on our next guest, as we are joined now by longtime duck hunting guide Ed Hansen of Hansen Outdoors. Ed, thanks for being here, man. Great to have you.
Hey, appreciate you having me, Cable.
You bet, man. It's great to have you. And Ed, I tell you what, this is usually my favorite weekend of the year. I'm still thrilled about it, but it's going to be pretty rough. October has been filled with 90 degree days, and I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, I know. The weather's going to, it's going to be hard on us this year to open it up. A lot of ducks still up in North Dakota and Canada. We just hadn't had the cold front, but hey, they'll get here. Hopefully yeah, we'll have some kill this weekend and maybe a few gadwalls, and we'll just make do.
Well, you know it's sad when you're checking the DU migration map and reading reports from folks in South Dakota, Wisconsin, Minnesota, places like that, where they're not even getting an influx of birds from Canada yet.
Oh, yeah. I got some buddies in Idaho. I've got one in Missouri that opened up this weekend, and they didn't have any birds there. And,
yeah.
You know, got to hit those places before they make it to us. So,
yep.
Take what you can get at this point.
Well, between all the ice eaters and other hunters short-stopping ducks all the way along the Central Flyway, and then this global warming crap, it's a wonder that a single greenhead will get killed in Texas this year.
Yeah, that's true. We usually get our greenheads later in the year, but we're still going to get migratory bird, you know, the teal and the gadwalls and spoonies and all those birds, they're coming. They got something inside telling them it's time to migrate, and they're going to show up. So, you know, you just got to make do. We live in Texas. We'll we'll do the best we can, and hopefully we'll get some cold weather and we'll shoot mallards, you know, around Christmas.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say that we're better duck hunters than the rest of the country, but, well, maybe we are, but I will say that, you know, these birds have been educated all the way down the Central Flyway, and we have to really be on our A game and probably work a lot harder than most other hunters.
That's right. Yeah, you got the best hunters in Texas because the birds are more educated by the time they get here. I spent 3 weeks in Canada, and we killed, you know, 400 or 500 ducks with a mojo. That's all we put out. So if you get them here and you can get them to decoy, then you know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so we, you know, everyone's expectations should be tempered a little bit this weekend. I mean, there's no reason not to go. You might still see some teal, gadwall, spoonies. Like you said, heck, I saw some spoonies during early teal season in September, even some pintails. So you never know.
Yeah.
But let's talk early season ducks. Supposing some arrive, talk about the early season approach, and we'll start with decoys and then transition into calling. But how many decoys will you use compared to later on in the season? And I know that's going to depend on whether you're hunting private or public, because
sure.
You do hunt public lakes as well. But let's start with, you know, smaller bodies of water, and then transition into to hunting big water reservoirs.
Yeah, I don't think you really have to use just too many decoys. If I'm on a private hole, I might put a couple dozen out. I try to replicate what I've been seeing. So today I got out on big water and I seen a bunch of teal. I seen a few gadwalls, so I'll probably throw out 30 or 40. That's about what I was seeing in groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll throw out mainly hen. You know, if you don't have teal decoys, then, you know, get as many mallard hen decoys to throw out. No sense in throwing a bunch of greenheads out because they're not here. So I try to replicate what I'm seeing out there. So I think 25, 30 brown decoys or teal decoys will probably do the trick for this weekend. And
right.
Then as we start getting some colored ducks, you know, we start getting some pintails, like you said, then you can work in a handful of those. And, you know, you don't want to go out there and throw all mallard drakes out and shoveler decoys because they're not here yet. And
right.
They don't look like that right now anyway. So,
yeah,
you just got to go with what you're seeing.
Yeah, those shoveler drakes, they sure make a pretty mount later on in the season, which I guess it was the last day of the season last year. We went out to a dairy farm, and you told me you had a spot that was just loaded up with shovelers if we wanted to go get them. And I told you I wanted one for the wall, and I'll be dang, we probably killed. I think there were six of us. We killed a six-man limit, and I think probably 30 of them were shovelers. And we had our pick of the litter for wall hangers. There was a ton of good ones.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get a lot of calls for people wanting shovelers, but I'd been sitting on that place for a while wanting to hunt it, so it kind of worked out.
Yeah.
We ended up with, you know, we did shoot 25 or so shovelers. There was a couple gadwalls in there and some tree ducks, but it was a good hunt nonetheless. Anytime you can shoot 36 birds, it's a good hunt.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Well, as far as calling goes, talk about your philosophy on that when, you know, early season compared to late season and how that differs.
Man, I don't really just get down on the call at any time, but I don't think it'd hurt to call a little in the early season. Like I said, you're going to see mainly teal. Really, if you put your decoys right and you got you a couple of spinning wing decoys out since they're, you know, you're shooting teal, you probably wouldn't even need a call much at all. But it's a good time to practice, to start getting ready. I mean, the only way you're going to get good is to practice anyway, so you're not going to hurt anything. But blow that call, work on your calling, then maybe by the time the mallards do show up, you'll have it down.
Right. Well, hey, Ed, anything else you want to add to this morning's discussion on early season duck hunting the Lone Star State?
Man, don't get depressed. I mean, the birds aren't here. They're not here, you know, in full migration yet, so have a good time. Spend time with your friends and family. Kill what birds that you do have an opportunity, and get ready because they're predicting some cold weather. And if it happens like they're saying, we've got a lot of water. The big lakes got some water in them, so we're going to get a push this year, and we're going to have some cold weather. And I think it's going to be a banner year for us.
We're,
the duck numbers are at all-time high. I mean, thanks to these conservation organizations out there.
Yeah.
I'm a Ducks Unlimited guy, but as long as you're supporting one or the other, then you're doing your part. And man, the bucks are at an all-time high, and I think we're gonna reap the benefits for it, you know, this year and for years to come.
Yep, we do have what should be a record fall flight. All we need is that cold weather. It'll be here soon. The ducks will show up, no doubt about that. A couple other things of note here. We are thrilled that Hanson Outdoors is sponsoring our November Photo of the Month contest. Y'all have offered up a two-man guided duck hunt to this month's photo contest winner. So y'all send in those outdoor photos for a chance to hunt with Ed and his retriever, Led, who is quite the working dog himself. And then also, you've got a Lone Star Outdoors Show hunt package special that you're offering right now, where if folks book a four-man hunt, they can bring a fifth hunter for free.
That's right. Yeah, we, you know, I need a four-man group to get on one of my private holes. So if they hear it on here or on your website, yeah, I'll throw in that fifth guy. And, you know, if you got five buddies and you split it, save a little bit of money that way. So I'll get back to the listeners.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, we are certainly excited about that. And folks can find you at HansonOutdoors.net. You've also got a Facebook page. You're very active, always posting updates on there so they can check you out on social media as well. Ed, thanks again for your time today. Always great talking ducks with you, and we hope you get off to a great start to the season.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me on. Hope everybody has a good season, and good luck to you guys.
All right. Take care, Ed.
Bye, bud.
All right. There he goes. Ed Hanson of Hanson Outdoors. That segment, by the way, proudly brought to you by Lone Star Beer, available once again this hunting season in the Lone Star Beer Game Guard Camo Can. So grab a 12-pack on your way to the lease or lake this season. And remember, there's no better way to celebrate full stringers and full straps than with an ice-cold Lone Star Beer. Lone Star Beer, the national beer of Texas. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by our good friend Butch Amlong of Squaw Mountain Ranch Trophy Hunts. We'll get into that very interesting relationship that exists between our native white-tailed deer and introduced exotic species, something that is so common on the Texas landscape. So interesting stuff coming up next. You're listening to DSC's Lone Star Outdoor Show.
I ride in a rodeo a few times a year, get stomped and bucked, and then I ride enough, I get muddy and bloody, then I swear it off again.
Ben Lofton Fencing is Texas' premier fencing company. They apply a design it right, build it right the first time mindset to all projects. And with 15 plus years experience, there's no job they won't tackle. Ben Lofton Fencing specializes in deer and exotic game fences, breeder and handling facilities, water gaps, as well as farm and ranch fences and corrals and working pens. Better Business Bureau certified, they offer the quality and personal service you expect. So for your next fencing project, go Texan and call Mr. Lofton himself at 254-709-1320 or visit benloftonfencing.com. Do you have a hog problem at your ranch or deer lease? We have the solution. The System Hog Trap comes in two sizes, 17-foot and 30-foot diameter traps. After you trap the hogs, take the top section off the trap and use it for another feeder site to keep the hogs away from the feeder. The System is both a trap and a deer food plot fence. That way you don't waste your money on just a hog trap. Call 940-391-3669 or visit www.goinfencing.com. That's goinfencing.com.
Hey, North Texas sports fans, this is Brian Spagnola, General Manager of Texas Motor Cars in Addison. My family's been in the car business for over 50 years, and I want to show you the difference in buying from a family-owned and operated business. TexasMotorCars.com is an awesome website that lets you do virtually all of your shopping online. We have a professional photographer that takes amazing photos, and we give you all the information that you'll need up front. You can even find out how much we will give you for your trade-in before you ever come in. I take pride in the fact you can come in, choose a car, and be out in less than an hour. We have financing rates starting at 1.79% on pre-owned vehicles and can help almost anybody. Please do yourself a favor. If you're in the market for a pre-owned vehicle of any kind, give us a shot. Let me show you how easy buying a vehicle should be. Visit TexasMotorCars.com or come visit our 20,000 square foot indoor showroom in Addison. Again, visit TexasMotorCars.com or call us at 1-888-9-TX-MOTORS.
Rockwall Marine is North Texas' premier boat dealership, offering the finest lineup of fishing boats anywhere. Mercury, Yamaha, Evinrude, Basscat, Alumacraft, and War Eagle, also specializing in all aspects of rigging, from power poles and electronics to motors and trolling motors. So whether you're looking for a new or used boat, parts or service, Rockwall Marine is your one-stop boating center and the nation's number one Basscat dealer in 2013. Call Tommy Yetz at 972-771-4442 or visit rockwallmarine.com.
Hey, this is Kevin Van Dam, and you're listening to the Lone Star. The Lone.
No one ever gets it on the first try.
Hey, this is Kevin Van Dam, and you're listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
Awesome.
The Road Goes On Forever, one of my favorites there from Robert Earl Keen, bringing us back on Dallas Safari Club's Lone Star Outdoor Show, presented by Lone Star Beer and Hoff Power Polaris. I'm your host, Cable Smith. Thanks so much for being here with me today. I sincerely do appreciate you, as we are about to talk some whitetails and exotics. But first, this segment is brought to you by Foreverlast, where we live hunting and fishing. Visit foreverlast.com to see the full line of hunting and fishing products today. Well, moving along here, with the general deer season opening up this weekend, I figured we'd talk some more whitetails, and here joining us now is our friend Butch Amlong, who manages Squaw Mountain Ranch, the beautiful 3,000-acre Jack County hunting destination. Butch, thanks for stopping in.
Well, good to be here. Good talking to you again.
Hey, yeah, you betcha, Butch. Great to have you. And just following along the Squaw Mountain Ranch Trophy Hunts Facebook page, looks like y'all are off to a great start to the season so far.
Well, yeah, we've been rocking and rolling, and you know, when we have some exceptional deer on the property, we always try to get our hunters to come earlier in the season before they start getting all broken up and good stuff like that.
Right, and since y'all are MLD3, y'all have been bow hunting and rifle hunting since September 28th.
That's correct. Yes, with the MLD, we get to go ahead and use our rifles as soon as the bow season opens.
Right on, right on. And Butch, we're going to talk whitetails, probably mix in some exotics here in just a little bit. But first of all, you've been doing this a long time, coming up on 20 years, your second full year now at the helm of Squaw Mountain Ranch, one of my favorite places to hunt.
Well, I've been managing hunting ranches for about 20 years, and I'm in my 11th year as a scientific breeder for the whitetail deer.
And before that, you've managed other ranches, and even you used to do elk outfitting in New Mexico.
That's correct. Yeah, I had my outfitter's license in New Mexico, and did a bunch of elk and bear and lion hunts and stuff like that out there.
Okay, so you've pretty much seen and done it all. And what comes along with that, whether it's no fence, low fence, high fence, doesn't matter. EHD is a big player now across North America. And luckily, we haven't been stricken by it in Texas as much as, say, some of the other Midwestern states where entire herds have been wiped out in recent years. But this disease, man, it doesn't mess around. Gnats bite the deer, they infect the deer, and they can be dead within a couple days. So have you guys had any outbreaks of EHD in Jack County that you're aware of?
Yes, we have had some, and it's an ongoing struggle. And as you mentioned, you know, when EHD actually strikes, it can kill a deer very quickly. But then, you know, it's the residual effects from that, the pneumonia that it brings on, and the weakened state of the deer. And so a lot of times you'll have a deer that dies, from pneumonia or something that's brought on by EHD. And that deer dies like 7 to 10 days after he's been exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, luckily, once a deer has exposure to it, he builds up a resistance. And so you'll hear these catchphrases people throwing around, I have an EHD resistant herd. And that's a herd that's been exposed to it and lived through it. And they actually build up some pretty decent antibodies and pass on through the does. So that helps in the breeding side of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And something that I found very interesting that you told me when we were visiting off the air earlier this week, you mentioned that when folks introduce northern genetics into their herd, and this is very common on high fence ranches, not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, you want those nice, desirable racks, but that makes those deer even that much more vulnerable to episodic hemorrhagic disease, or EHD?
Well, yes. They still contract it from the gnats. They're just, you know, they're more susceptible to it.
Mm-hmm.
if they have the northern blood in them. And, you know, personally, I try to keep a herd that's 75% South Texas, just because I found that the survivability and the viability of the herd is just that much stronger. And I've actually, you know, gotten into the higher percentage of northern and found that I have just that many more problems with PHD. You get 50% or more northern in a herd, and you risk, like you were talking about up in the Midwest, you risk wiping out a herd, even a fenced-in herd.
Mm-hmm.
When you get too high of a percentage of northern in your deer herd.
Well, so obviously the question would be, why would introducing northern genetics make a white-tailed deer more susceptible to succumbing to the effects of EHD? Maybe it's because they're out of the environment that they're naturally intended to be in, or maybe we have a different strain of EHD down south. Maybe you can shed some light on that.
Well, sure. I mean, I believe it. I believe it is that. I believe it's somewhat being out of their natural environment, and then somewhat that they're being exposed to stuff that they were never exposed to, you know, up north. I mean, not just you know, a particular, maybe, you know, EHD is now, when we start talking about vaccines that people are using, they're in strain 7 and strain 8 as this disease, you know, mutates and changes itself to try to stay alive. So some of these deer, even though it's EHD, they've never been exposed to a strain that may be, you know, present down here in South Texas. And that, coupled with the fact that, you know, they're not, they haven't been exposed to these temperatures, they haven't been exposed to this environment. And you team all that together on them, and the chances of them pulling through an EHD strain just lessens.
Well, yeah, and that makes sense, Butch. But let's shift gears here and talk some antler production. You know, we had rain, maybe it wasn't the most timely, but what kind of headgear are bucks carrying this fall compared to recent seasons?
Well, we saw, you know, we kind of had a weird year in that we didn't have rains when we should have, and we had rains when we didn't normally get them, and I was kind of wondering what that would do to antler production. But we've seen a great antler production year. We have deer that are somewhat, if you will, out of our program, that we just let the natural genetics and stuff, the natural Jack County deer, take over, and we've seen excellent production in them, as well as our whitetails that came out of a program, but weren't being fed in a pen, you know, for over a year. So on both sides of it, we've seen a great year for antlers.
Well, yeah, and one Facebook post that y'all had really stood out for me. A hunter harvested a 146-inch 8-point, typical, and that's getting up there close to the holy grail for me. I mean, when you talk about a 150-inch 8-point, that's about as beautiful a deer as I think there is out there.
Well, and you know, Cable, that is a sign of a good year of antler growth. I mean, you know, they say you can't wish an 8 into a 10. Some of those deer are never going to be 10. But when you get that 8-point that, like you said, has a beautiful frame, real heavy, you know, I mean, that shows you that there was some good stuff out there for them to eat, and that they got good nutrition through the year.
Mm-hmm. And like Alan Kane, our Texas Parks and Wildlife Whitetail Program leader, alluded to earlier in the hour, there's been a great acorn crop this fall, and I know that's making hunting a lot tougher as animals are not coming to feed, but man, it's some good nutrition out there on the landscape for them, for sure.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the acorns are great, and we love having them, and the nutrition value on them is just awesome, but I tell you what, when a feeder goes off, you don't have animals tripping over each other getting to it right now. They're getting plenty of nutrition out on the range, and That does make it more difficult, but you know, the challenge is always part of the deal.
Right. And the challenge is, you know, often the best part, and that sense of accomplishment after a job well done that comes with a successful hunt. But Butch, let's shift gears here and get into that relationship between white-tailed deer and introduced exotics, who have, you know, they've got a foothold now in many areas of Texas, under not just high fence, but also low fence and no fence situations, you know, Axis Deer, Black Buck, Sika, Audad in West Texas and the Hill Country. I mean, the list goes on, but that relationship can be a strenuous one, and you've been doing this long enough to be able to kind of relay some of the concerns that comes along with whitetails and exotics coexisting.
Well, you know, there's always some concerns. You know, people have kind of argued back and forth on this for years, and they say, well, if you have an animal that doesn't, if it's a grazer and a deer is a browser, that they're not going to compete. But a white-tailed deer, as you know, is very sensitive to pressure of any kind. And so even though they're not competing for the same food necessarily, they're always competing for space. So a white-tail will easily get crowded out of an area. If you're talking about feeders, I think just about every hunter has seen it, that if a whitetail is there and any other animal tries to come into that feeder, if it's a hog, if it's any kind of exotic or anything, they're going to give way and they're going to go ahead and leave. And so you just have to be very careful, when you're trying to balance exotics and whitetails. You have to decide what your primary goal is, growing the exotics or growing the whitetails, because you are going to affect your whitetail's growth and their behavior by introducing exotics. And, obviously the more different types of species you have, the harder it's going to be on them. And, I try to find out of the way places to set feeders to where the exotics might not want to go or feel as comfortable in. And, just a small little feeder just really tucked away somewhere. And those whitetails are much more comfortable with coming into that. And then, if you need to cut back on the amount of one animal or the other, that's going to be totally your choice. But just knowing that you're not going to have, anytime you introduce an exotic onto a ranch, you're going to affect your whitetails there.
Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of high fence ranches have, the place broken up into different 600,000-800,000 acre pastures, and they have different species in each one of those pastures, and I've seen it plenty of times. I mean, last time I was hunting an exotic ranch, I had some nice whitetails I was watching under the feeder, and here comes a scimitar horned orcs, and I tell you what, those whitetails, they got out of there fast.
Right, like I said, they may not even be necessarily competing for the same food, but they just, they're very skittish animals, and that's why we love to hunt them.
Yeah.
But that doesn't bode well for them when they start trying to go up against an animal that's twice their size or sometimes half their size. They just aren't comfortable around other critters usually.
Butch, in your experience, have you noticed that there is one exotic species or maybe species that are more aggressive towards whitetails than others?
Well, yeah, your African antelopes seem to be, the oryx, the attics, any of them, the dama gazelle or any of the gazelles or antelope or whatever, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's the competition they have to fight their way through over in Africa or what it is, but they seem to be more aggressive and they'll run those whitetails off pretty quick.
Right, right. Well, yeah, but one of the things that goes hand in hand with those animals is it really makes for a cool experience driving around the ranch. You see all these different herds of naturally reproducing animals, from scimitar horned oryx to attics to black buck, axis deer. I mean, you name it. What are some of the other species, though, that have really exceeded your expectations during your time at Squaw Mountain Ranch?
Well, and what we found, Cable, with this, with this terrain and these big canyons and all the oaks and the ponds and all that kind of stuff is, I've been here 2 years now, and I'm finding out some of the species that just really work well here. And I think elk and red stag are two of the big ones. I mean, we had the elk were just bugling like crazy here 2 weeks ago, and the stags were roaring, and we were able to call them in and hunt them as you would, if you were going up to Colorado or New Mexico, or if you were going over to New Zealand to hunt these red stags. So, the antler game is doing real well here, and like I said, all of the African antelope they thrive here. I mean, they've been growing them in Texas for decades just because of that. So, the Gemsbuck, the scimitar horned oryx, the attic, all of those species are doing great. Our zebra herd is doing great. We're still having, babies every spring, and everybody enjoys coming out and looking at the zebra herds. And, we're doing our best to promote the breeding herds, and you're aware of what went on with the Scimitar and Oryx and the Attucks and the Dom and Gazelle, and how the Texas ranches have actually reintroduced those back into Africa now, mm-hmm. which is just an awesome success story. But and our Scimitar and Oryx herd is up to 50 animals now. So I mean, they're just doing great out here.
Well, yeah, and they're also doing great on my grill, because I ate some of that Scimitar Horned Oryx bull that I shot with you for dinner last night, and it was just as delicious as always. Can't beat it for table fare, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's the bonus to all of those African antelope, is they're very good on the grill, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that was a little bit of a crazy hunt. I mean, I was dead set on hunting with my muzzleloader, and we find a group of oryx, put a stalk on them. There's probably 10 or 12 cows, but we don't see a bull. And we put the stalk on these animals to try to close the distance to 100 yards. I'm getting frustrated. I'm like, Butch, there's no bull. You're like, Cable, I've been doing this 2 decades, just trust me, there's gonna be a bull. Well, sure enough, after a little while, he makes his way out of the woods, and it takes a good amount of time for us to have a shot opportunity where he's clear of his cows. And I make what I think is a good shot, but that's when it got real crazy, and we couldn't find any blood. And this is a 50-cal muzzleloader. We get over there, no blood at all, and you ask how I felt about the shot. And I was like, well, Butch, I think I made a pretty good shot. I was steady on the sticks, and I felt confident about it. We didn't see a single drop of blood until we found him piled up about 40 yards away. And granted, it looked like a murder scene when we got up on him. I mean, there was blood everywhere, but it was very odd not to have any kind of blood trail whatsoever.
Right, and that's not unusual, actually. I tell people all the time with a lot of these African antelope, not to panic, and I did the same thing with you. I said, how was your shot? And I've learned through the years to always trust that hunter's gut instinct. If he says he felt good about it, that animal's probably down, and we just give it a little bit of time and follow the general direction, and don't worry about the lack of blood trail, because that's not unusual with the African antelope at all.
Well, they're certainly some tough animals, no doubt about that, and it just goes to show you, just trust your guide, especially if you're hunting a species you're not familiar with. There's a lot of truth to that old adage that the guide knows best. Butch, great experience out there. I've been hunting turkeys at Squaw Mountain Ranch for years now, but that was my first exotic hunt with you guys, and I can't wait to do it again, and honestly can't recommend the ranch enough. I mean, amazing accommodations, incredible food, just wonderful people to be around, and I took the wife and kiddo, and we all had a blast. So whether you want to hunt whitetails or exotics, check it out, smrhunts.com. You can also find them on Facebook. Butch, thanks for your insight today. It's always a treat to talk whitetails and exotics with you, and we'll do it again very soon.
Well, absolutely. Actually, we're very passionate about it and the husbandry of these animals and everything else. And, it's just, like I said before, it's a great success story what Texas has been able to do with these exotics, and then just the added bonus of those extra opportunities to get to hunt them when you're out hunting whitetails already, and you've killed yours and everybody else in your party still hunting, you have something else to go chase.
Well, no doubt about it. That's what makes the Lone Star State so great, and we'll actually see you pretty soon. I think we're coming out to help guide some whitetail hunts this fall, so looking forward to that, and we'll do it again very soon.
Okay, Cable. See you soon.
All right. There he goes, our good friend Butch Amlong of Squaw Mountain Ranch, and I really like that word that Butch used there, the husbandry of these animals, because that's really what we're doing. When we bring exotics over, it's a big responsibility. And Texas in general has done an exceptional job raising these animals and ensuring the survival of entire species in some cases. So fascinating stuff there. That segment, by the way, proudly brought to you by Sendero Seed Company, Texas' premier seed company, offering anything and everything you need to keep your whitetail herd happy and healthy. Check them out at senderoseed.com. They've even got the Dr. Deer-backed Buck Forage oats. You can also call my buddy Rob Hughes at 1-877-610-SEED today. Sendero Seed Company for all your planting needs. Let's knock out a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Lone Star Outdoor News writer Steve Schwartz, and we'll tell you how to make sure that your freshly caught fish stays as fresh and tastes as good as it possibly can when you prepare it for the table. There's a tip that you might not be aware of, and we'll get into that next. You're listening to DSC's Lone Star Outdoors.
There's a storm in my rear view and a city on my nerve. He's a mind in the straightaway, and there's comfort in the curve.
The Central Flyway migration of ducks and geese is going to be epic. And if your trigger finger is getting that itch, then give Ed Hansen of Hansen Outdoors a call. Now booking trips in the Northeast Texas area. Hunt lakes like Cooper or Lake Fork for $150 a gun, or hunt Ed's private honey holes for $200 a gun. You'll also enjoy amazing dog work with Retriever Champion Led. Isn't that right, Led? Visit HansenOutdoors.net to book your trip today, or give Ed a call at 903-521-4595. And right now only, book a four-man duck hunt and bring a fifth hunter for free.
Rockwall Gun Club is North Texas' premier shooting facility, offering both indoor and outdoor ranges, including a unique 500-yard rifle range. If shotgunning's your thing, then check out the 18-station clay course. Opening summer 2014, Rockwall Gun Club is offering special introductory, family, and corporate membership rates for founding members. Located at 15950 State Highway 205, you can also visit rockwallgunclub.com or call 972-215-6902. Rockwall Gun Club, the private shooting experience.
At Frost, we could talk to you about our 24/7 online banking. Or we could talk to you about our more than 1,100 ATMs across Texas. We can even talk to you about our mobile banking app that lets you pay bills, transfer funds, and deposit checks from anywhere. But at the end of the day, there's nothing we enjoy more than to just talk to you.
Thank you for calling Frost. How may I help you?
We're here with the technology and convenience you want and the service you deserve. Frost. Banking, investments, insurance.
Larson Electronics is a Texas-based lighting company that's been outfitting the United States military since the 1960s. And while they continue to support our troops, they also now have over 200 lights ideal for your hunting and fishing needs, like the 35-watt HID Camouflage Go Light Striker with remote that's 15 million candle power in the palm of your hand. Ideal for predator and hog hunting, they also have remote-controlled floodlights, feeder lights, and LED boat lights. Visit LarsonElectronics.com and go Texan with Larson Electronics for all your lighting needs.
What brought all this change in me? You're the one who made me see how love was meant to be. Somebody's doing me right, somebody's holding me tight, sharing my days and my nights. Somebody.
That's a classic from Keith Whitley. Doing Me Right is the name of that one, from one of the all-time greats gone way too soon. I'm Cable Smith, by the way. You are listening to Dallas Safari Club's Lone Star Outdoor Show, presented by Lone Star Beer and Hoff Power Polaris. We're about to offer some insight on how to prep your catch for the table. But first, this segment is brought to you by Pope Brothers Guide Service and Outfitting. They hunt all over Texas, and they hunt for everything from whitetail to exotics, super exotics, even hog dogging, you name it, they've got it. Visit Pope Brothers by going to their website at huntsintexas.com to book your hunt today. Well, let's go ahead and bring on our next guest here. He's a writer for Lone Star Outdoor News, one of our favorite publications. He's a passionate fly fisherman and angler, and we're going to dive into one of his most recent features here momentarily. So it's my pleasure to welcome Steve Schwartz back to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You betcha. Always enjoy reading your articles, and we're going to get into one of them here in just a sec. But first of all, how has your fall been?
My fall's been good. I mean, I've been fishing as much as possible, so that's definitely important to me. And we have a couple of hunts coming up with the crew over at Lone Star Outdoor News. So we've been trying to get outside as much as possible, which is kind of the goal. So, yeah, it's been not bad. Hopefully it'll cool down here pretty soon.
Right on. And what have you been fishing for? Have you made it down to the coast or gone anywhere exciting?
I've been fishing for bass some up here in North Texas a little bit. We've been over to the Lower Mountain Fork to go fly fishing over in southeast Oklahoma. But, yeah, just kind of all over the place. I've made it on the coast. I'm going down there in mid-November to Port Mansfield to fish for some trout and some bull red. So that's the goal here in a couple weeks. But yeah, now, just kind of sticking to North Texas. So.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, yeah. I wanted to get into a recent piece of yours, and it really breaks down the proper way to take care of a fish once the fish is on the boat. It's going to be taken home, prepared for the table. There's some things you can do to really maximize the palatable nature of that fish and really get the maximum potential out of it. Because we've all been there. You know, sometimes you take a bite of fish and you're like, ugh, you know, I like fish, but that's almost a little too fishy.
It can go bad real quick. Yeah.
Yeah. So your article here, it's called a Fresh Method, and it discusses the practice of bleeding a fish to ensure the meat is the best it possibly can be for the table. So I guess, first of all, there's a really interesting way to bleed out a fish, and I'll let you talk about, you know, what these guides told you they did.
Sure, yeah. Well, the reason I started thinking about doing the article is I went out striper fishing with Striper Express on Lake Texoma, and one of the guides, his name's Chris Carey, every time we caught a striper, he would take a single strand of the gill and just tear it. And I asked him why he was doing that, and he said it bled out the fish. And then he started describing to me why he did it and things like that. And I guess the method behind it is, you know, the fish stays alive. It'll die quickly, but it keeps breathing in a cooler full of water and pumping that blood out. So it's a very non-stressful way to kill a fish, and it affects the meat. And he showed me, a piece of meat that kind of was cloudy and gray from not bleeding it. And he showed me a piece of fish after he bled it, and it was, you know, like what you would think good fish should look like, clear and didn't squeeze out blood whenever you pushed on it and things like that. So,
Okay. So noticeable difference.
Definitely. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so from there, I kind of made some calls. I called a fish market down the coast, and they had kind of heard of the practice, but didn't really do it themselves. But they led me to a guy named PJ Stoops, who is a kind of a restaurateur, actually not much of an angler, but he's been practicing and preparing fish for years and years and years. And he had a lot of good information about it just because he doesn't understand why people don't do it. Because it's just like any other animal. And he used the example of a chicken or a pig. When you dress it, you bleed it out. And it's healthier for the meat. It makes the meat taste better. And just as far as dressing an animal, it's what you do.
Right.
As far as the fishing culture, they don't have that "it's what you do" kind of thought process behind it.
Well, yeah. And most of the times, you know, if I've gone fishing with a guide, or if we're going out on Lake Louisville or Lake Fork or wherever, and we're loading up the cooler with a limit of crappie, you know, you catch the fish, you throw it in the cooler. There's no, you know, we've never really given it a second thought.
Sure, yeah.
But this is some great insight here. And so I got curious, and I found quite a bit of literature out there on fish care for the table and the practice of bleeding out fish. And one thing that, you know, was pretty common and the stuff I was reading was that live wells and live stringers are actually, you know, less than ideal for the fish. In a live well, the water, you know, obviously the temperature gets hot. There's usually more fish in there than, you know, it's over its maximum capacity. The water gets hot. The fish are stressed out, all that stuff. And same thing with the stringer. They die very slowly on a stringer. All things are not ideal for, you know, for the table.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like when you're slaughtering a cow. I mean, you hear people talk about that, and they want it to be as quick as possible, because as soon as the animal knows something's wrong, they're releasing all kinds of stressing toxins and things like that into their meat as a reaction. And so, I mean, it's got to have an effect on the meat. And it's pretty interesting to talk to these guys, and they both had different methods. Like I said, Chris, he just takes a single strand of the gill and tears it off. PJ Stoops, he actually gets a really sharp knife and cuts below the gill plate and actually severs the spine. But he bleeds them out that way. And I guess he thinks that's a little bit quicker, a little bit more efficient, but probably not quite as easy either. But you could definitely see a visible difference. You know, the meat was cloudier, and when you squeezed it, a little red bubble would come up or something like that. And PJ was convinced that the meat stays fresher longer without that blood in it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm assuming that's just less organic material in the meat that could go bad.
Sure.
So yeah, after I talked to these guys, that personally, I was just thinking, yeah, that makes complete sense. You know, why haven't I been doing that? You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a really, really enlightening thing to talk to you guys about for sure. So.
Well, yeah, and one other piece that I read, it was by Jim Vashro. He's with the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Department, and he kind of had a piece that broke it down into four steps. First thing that you want to do, and this is, you know, his opinion, is bonk the fish, you know, just smack it, kill it instantly, you know, bleed the fish like we've been talking about, gut it. And so he takes it a step further and says, gut the fish while you're doing all that stuff, and then chill it on ice. Basically, treat it like you would like raw hamburger meat. You want to get it on ice, gutted, you know, bled out, all that stuff, and that's going to give it the purest taste.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a definitely good way to look at it, but then you have to balance, like, what are you willing to do while you're on the water?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I mean, especially if you're on fish, you know, it's like rod tips
sure,
are bent.
You're not going to sit in the boat and try and gut a fish while they're hitting the top water or something like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I mean, and like I said, I talked to these different guys, and they each had their own method for doing it, and each one swore by their method. So, that's, I mean, you know how it is in fishing
sure.
culture. Everybody has their own thing. But
the general consensus,
overall,
and even, you know, from guides to commercial anglers, commercial fishermen who are out there fishing for, you know, sushi-grade tuna, they do the same thing, man. They get the blood out of the meat because, you know, the meat's it looks prettier. Like you've said, even with striper, these guys are fishing, you know, catching $1,000 a pop tuna, and they want that meat as, you know, as clean and pure-looking as possible. So,
And when it just takes something as simple as pulling a gill, you know, kind of my thought is why not do it? So that's kind of what it wrapped up as is, you know, it can't hurt anything. You know, it's quicker for the fish, less stressful. And, you know, if it leads to better meat eating, then why not?
No doubt about it. I'm certainly going to start doing it. That is for sure. Hey, Steve, thanks for your time today, man. Enjoyed the article and always great to touch base with you.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Thanks. And yeah, it was enjoyable as always.
Well, all right, man. Be sure to send us some pictures from your upcoming coast trip. Love to follow along in the adventure.
Will do. That's one of the main reasons I'm going down there. There's no such thing as a day off in the outdoor media industry, as you know. So.
I know the feeling. Well, hey, safe travels, and we'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Thanks.
All right. There he goes, our good buddy Steve Schwartz from Lone Star Outdoor News. Man, unfortunately, we have got to get out of here. We are flat out of time. So we appreciate Steve as well as our other guest, Alan Kane from Texas Parks and Wildlife, Butch Amlong from Squaw Mountain Whitetails, and our good buddy and duck hunting guide, Ed Hansen from Hansen Outdoors. I hope everybody has a great weekend, whether you're chasing deer, ducks, or maybe it's too warm and you're hitting the lake for some bass. Whatever the case, be safe out there. If you're climbing a tree, wear your harness. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making this show possible. Thanks to you, the listener, for being a part of Dallas Safari Club's Lone Star Outdoor Show. Until next time, I'm Cable Smith saying, y'all have a great week in the outdoors.
I've been spinning my wheels. I've been wasting my time. Tried everything I know just to get you off my mind. I tried slamming doors and talking to my...
Hey y'all, Chris Letzinger, online sales manager at Cinnamon Creek Ranch here, reminding you, we're not your typical archery club. We're a one-of-a-kind archery facility with indoor and outdoor ranges, full pro shop, and six different 3D courses. Cinnamon Creek was designed by hunters for hunters. Located in Roanoke, Texas, we have over 200 3D targets to hone your archery skills. Call 817-439-8998 or visit us at cinnamoncreekranch.com to visit our new online store. That's cinnamoncreekranch.com.
Cable Smith here for the Seat Shop. That outdoor lifestyle we all love, yeah, it can be pretty rough on the interior of our trucks. That's why I trust my friends at the Seat Shop. Is your driver's seat ripped where you slide in and out of your truck or SUV? They can replace that one cover, and the new leather is guaranteed to match your factory interior. Or if you want to overhaul your full front row or your entire interior like I did, the Seat Shop can definitely take care of you. And if you're looking for something to protect your leather, they've got the new Carhartt seat covers as well. Perfect for hauling gear, guns, and dogs around. Guys, the Seat Shop is a great family-owned company who really knows their stuff, and their old-fashioned customer service is a hard thing to find these days. I had a great time working with them, and I know you will too. So visit theseatshop.com or give them a call at 214-710-2565 today.
If you're in the market for a compact track loader, then check out the Bobcat Advantage, where Bobcat track loaders squared off against other brands in a variety of tests and challenges. Whether you're looking for performance advantages, uptime protection, or quality design, Bobcat compact track loaders are the best built machines in the industry. But don't take our word for it. Watch the videos at BobcatAdvantage.com or see Bobcat machines in person at Bobcat of Dallas, Louisville, Bobcat of Fort Worth, and Bobcat of Longview. Visit BobcatOfDallas.com or call 469-586-0000 today.